Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. Come explore news, information, entertainment, and ideas from a pagan point of view around the globe. Tune in every night for interviews and lively discussions on current events, philosophies, traditional and not-so-traditional practices, DIY projects, the who's who and what's what of our growing pagan community right here on Blog Talk Radio in English and now in Spanish.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to a beautiful Sunday evening, October 13th. The moon is so beautiful right outside my window. I can see it shining. Yay! What was I going to say after that? Oh, yes. I'm Liz Hamilton, and this is the Pagan Variety Show, or the Pagan Variety Hour. We go by both names, I suppose. And we have a special treat for you tonight. And we are waiting for that person to call in, but let me go ahead and introduce my illustrious co-hosts to steal Ed Hubbard's words. Brandon Tripp, number one.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, sir?
I've had a less than productive day. It wasn't a non-productive day, but it wasn't like yesterday where I had, 18 things to do and I probably got 13 of them done, which was far less frustrating than most.
Yes. And we also have Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hi. Our guest hasn't called in yet, huh?
No. Either that or she doesn't know to press 1. Did you tell her to press 1?
You know what? I will call and do that now. No, I didn't tell her to press 1.
Well, if she's listening,
Juan gets so tired of being pressed.
Yes,
I do not like that. You quit pressing 1.
Yeah. 1 lets me know that she's, which one out of the people that she is. But we don't have very many callers. We just have, 2. Besides you guys. So anyway, tonight our special guest is Ginger Doss, and she should be joining us presently. But in the meantime, I figured, oh my gosh, this week, I just can't wait for Halloween, for Samhain. I have to agree with Ed on this one, and I see it as two holidays happening on the same day. Halloween, for the secular people, and then Samhain for those of us who are, pagan and stuff. And I just can't wait. We are, halfway through the month already, if you can believe that.
I wish we could get the rights to ministries and wish every day was Halloween.
Yeah, no. That would be bad, because then it would be, boring.
Wasn't boring to me back when I used to hang out at the punk clubs all the time, and you get the end of this end of the year, and you're hearing that 5 times a night.
What? Huh?
Wish every day was Halloween.
Oh, yeah. No, let's not sing. No, Brendan. Brendan, you singing, I think, is forbidden on my show, remember?
Heavy sigh. Mucho tranquilo. Poor Juan.
It's okay. You'll live. So anyway, what else has been going on in my life? Oh my goodness. I have been looking forward to this interview because those of you who know me know I love Ginger Doss and I love Velvet Hammer, who later became Dream Tribe. And as homework, I spent the whole day at work listening to Ginger Doss on her Bandcamp thingy-majigger, her Bandcamp page. And we have Tim returning. Hello again. What's up? Hello, Tim.
Yeah, Ginger just called me, and I guess I didn't see it. I thought I pressed, hold on.
Okay, so, while
yeah,
we're
hello?
Looking to get, yes, I am here.
Okay, crap, I'm going to hang up and
yes.
call Ginger.
Yes, good idea, good plan, go ahead. Apparently we're having a little bit of confusion or trouble or something, but...
Chaos, anarchy.
Anarchy? No, not anarchy.
Well, we're coming close to it.
Yeah, I guess, a little. Okay. So, I want to play a song to kind of fill in the gap here. And unfortunately, we don't have any of... Let me just search one more time. But I'm pretty sure that we don't have any Velvet Hammer / Dream Tribe / Ginger Doss music in here, unfortunately. I thought we did at one point. Oh, and actually, we don't have to go to a song because our guest is now in the queue here. So let me bring her on, click the button, and cross my fingers. Hello, Ginger.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. And welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here.
Awesome. We're psyched to have you here. I think I'm the most psyched because I'm a really big fan of yours. I remember hearing now I'm blanking on the name of the song. But anyway, it was one of the songs you did with Velvet Hammer when they were Velvet Hammer, and I've been hooked. I've been hooked ever since. So,
was it Come Down?
Yes, it was. Thank you. Oh my goodness.
Well, I still do that song. I still do that song.
That's awesome. That's wonderful. We also have a couple of other hosts tonight. We have Brendan Tripp. Say hi,
Howdy.
Brendan.
Howdy.
And
hi, Brendan.
Then we have, and then we have Tim, who I'm going to bring on again. Hi, Tim.
Hey. Yeah, and speaking of Come Down, not only does she still do that song live, which I've seen a few times, but it is on one of her solo albums as well.
Oh.
Yes, it is.
Awesome. Which album is that? Do you know offhand?
Yes, Hand and Hammer is my second solo release. I re-released it because the very first recording of that was produced. I had made an exchange for studio time, and so it was not my own production, very first release of that song, and so I really wanted the chance to release it again with my own production, and so... I did again with Hand and Hammer, and along with that song, there are a bunch of other songs that I was able to re-release with my own production, doing them in the style I'm doing them solo. So,
cool. That's really awesome. So,
yeah.
do you have like a preference? Do you like to work solo more than you like to work with a band?
No, I really love playing with a band. I love playing with a band. But playing solo has been incredible, too. They're different entities. For the longest time, for my whole musical career, I've been playing in bands. And
mm-hmm.
so I was used to being kind of just up there, you know, just doing my thing. And because I'm an introvert... I could, you know, get off stage and I wouldn't have to talk to a whole lot of people, and that was just fine with me. And I love the power of the band, and I've been in some great bands, and I love that feeling on stage when you're playing with other people. There's nothing like it. But when I play solo, I have found a whole new world of opening up myself and coming into contact. It's a much more intimate thing for me. And I have found a new place for myself and my music, and it's been a wonderful experience.
That's wonderful. I was just telling basically everybody who's listening, and Brendan, and I don't know if Tim was here for that part. I think he might have been trying to get a hold of you. I was just telling everybody that I was listening all day at work to your Bandcamp page, the From Love to Love album.
Yes, yes.
And it's wonderful. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, thank you.
I was transported back. You have a very distinct sound, and I really like that. Oh, my goodness. There was something I was going to ask you. Oh, Tim had mentioned that you only play like in certain venues now. Like, you don't play in clubs or bars anymore. And he asked me to ask you why you don't do that. And I'm curious as to the story.
Well, sometimes I play clubs, but it's very rare. If I do play a club, it'll be a special club that I have a good relationship with, like in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bar scene is not what my music is. I play so many festivals, spiritual and women's festivals, goddess festivals. I play a lot of churches. I play house concerts. And that's where my music really belongs. I'm singing about songs that are very near and dear to the spiritual community. And there are ceremonies done to the songs. I love fire spinning, belly dancing, drumming. And anymore, whenever I've gone to clubs and played clubs, it's a distraction. The energy there, it's just not for me. It's just not what I want to do anymore, and I'm very thankful that I don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, and that must be a really great relief, not having to do what you don't want to do.
Absolutely.
You know, and I really, really appreciate the spiritual aspect of your music. It really does touch people. I'm sure you've had, you know, plenty of people come up and say, oh, something along the lines of, oh, you know, your music has changed my life, or something awesome like that.
I'm very fortunate that way.
Yeah, that must be really amazing. I could definitely see have the perks of having that as your job.
I'm very blessed because I didn't really strive to do that. That's just what happened because mm-hmm. I'm such a spiritual person and I've been a seeker most of my life. I've been very spiritual since I was very little. And my path has taken me on a lot of different routes, and that comes through naturally in my music. And what that's done is it's connected me with a lot of different spiritual communities and a lot of different paths and a lot of different people. And people have shared their story with me, and that's become an inspiration for me. And my own struggles in my life, my own trials and tribulations and successes have all come through in the music. And I find that that's what's helping people is when I share my own battles through the songs and my own, when I discovered, like, for example, the Sedona method, which is a method for releasing emotions that are getting in the way. I was able to write From Love to Love, that song, as a result of that practice and my Buddhist practice and some of the other paths that have helped me to grow as a spiritual being. And I'm so happy. It's so amazing to me. It's such a gift and a blessing when other people are inspired by that as well.
That's pretty amazing. That's really awesome to hear. I don't do many interviews, but generally I like to let the guys ask a question or two. Tim or Brendan or both, not both of you at once, please. What's a question you have?
Go ahead, Mr. Trim.
Oh, you're wanting me to ask the question.
No, not the question. Do not ask the question, please.
Ask the question. Because I'm a geezer, and every time I hear DOS, I think it has something to do with Microsoft. And because every time Tim was mentioning you, I was thinking, wow, this is like a new operating system we're going to be talking about. It's an operating system for redheads. It's the Ginger DOS.
So
no, I am not an operating system, and I am not affiliated. In fact, I tend to be. I'm one of those Mac geeks.
Oh no! Ah, oh, well, we still love you. You sing well, so we'll forgive you this time. Oh my goodness! I wish I could be an Apple person. That'd be nice. Maybe one of these days. Maybe I can be both. I've heard of people who do both.
Well, actually, I do both.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I go both ways.
Redemption. Redemption has been won. Yay.
If you do really want to go that way right now, on Yugster, they have an Apple MacBook refurb for $249.97, which is the lowest I've ever seen an Apple Apple laptop going for.
Yeah, that's
insanely
amazing.
Insanely low.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Tim would want to ask you about brushwood, so I'll let him dive in with a question or two.
Yes, if you go to gingerdolf.com, you will see her blog. You can go to her blog section, and you know she goes in detail about brushwood. But I would love for you to go into more detail, like really hit home on the drumming, and really explain to everybody that hasn't read your blog how great it is. And something else I think really needs to get over is the sense of community. Like there's so much. So many moving parts at Brushwood. And as a performer, you probably have a bird's eye view and can really appreciate just how miraculous it is that everything goes off there like it does.
It is. It is an amazing, amazing place. And the festivals they do there are just, I'm just so impressed. And I did the best I could to impart how impressive it all is. And because I haven't even started on the Canadian part of my blog for the summer tour, I have to cut myself off short, because otherwise I would spend days on one section of my trip. Basically, my blog is supposed to be a general overview of what I've done, like, for example, over the summer. And now I'm into the fall, and there's tons of stories that I want to tell about the fall, and I haven't even finished the summer. So unfortunately,
wow.
I have to stop at some point when I talk about my adventures. And
right.
I hate that, because there's so much more that I want to say. But I do the best I can to impart how important certain things are about certain events, and I have to generalize, otherwise I would never write any songs or book any tours. Do all the other stuff that I have to do.
I mean, now that we have the time, I would love to hear you go into Brushwood, because how many years have you been playing there now? I mean,
well, this is the interesting thing. This year was my second time.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have been wanting to go, and because I'm in Texas, you know, upstate New York is a world away for me. And booking a tour up there with a band is a major endeavor. And you have to have all kinds of gigs along the way to pay your way up. And Kenny Klein, who was just there this year also and did a fabulous job, is such an amazing artist. And I just did a show with him 2 weeks ago at Pagan Pride in New Orleans, which was awesome. He had to do a fan funding campaign to get his band up to Brushwood, because
mm-hmm.
he's coming all the way from New Orleans, you know. So
yep.
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, I really like Kenny too. He's like my other favorite Pagan artist. Pagan's
he's
like
fabulous.
Cool. Yeah, oh yeah, he's really amazing, and you know, his new band Fishbird, they're just gonna rise and rise and rise. They're just gonna keep going. I love his music work. You know, it's good to hear the same from fellow musicians about other musicians, because I think. I don't know. I think it's kind of like the Pagan leaders You know, they're all friends, but sometimes the middle management, quote-unquote, kind of doesn't get along so well. It's probably not exactly the same in the music industry, but it's just good to know that, you know, musicians get along rather well with each other.
Especially in the pagan / spiritual community, it is, you know, it's not a huge group. It's a very select group, and what's so great is that it's there are more and more artists coming up and shining all the time, and I'm so happy about that. And a lot of us, we know each other, we connect with each other, and we help each other throughout the country. And I've connected with so many great artists on my travels, and whenever they come through Texas, I do my best to hook them up with a good show or house concert host. And they do the same. So we're trying to build up that scene and that sense of community between the artists as well, and it's an awesome thing.
That's really fantastic, and that kind of touches on, Tim, I think you were just going to jump in there on this, if I feel you correctly. I think you're going to jump in on the house concerts thing and, you know, what people can do to kind of help get bands places and help get musicians places.
Yeah, absolutely. House concerts are awesome, and they are a fabulous way of getting to know the artist and getting to hear the music in a very intimate way without dealing with a crowd of people who could care less, you know. And that's what happens when you
right.
go into a bar, and it's just the people that want to be there, that want to hear the music, and they can hear it without distraction.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of parking, and they don't have, and they're comfortable, and they can drink what they want and relax with their friends. I've got on my website, I've got a house concert FAQ. So if anybody wanted to go to gingerdust.com/house concert, frequently asked questions, it kind of does the breakdown, because I have some people who do house concerts all the time and people who have never done them before. And whenever I'm coming through a town for the very first time, that's usually the route I'll go, is to try and find a house concert. And I have connected with a lot of great people that way.
That is really fantastic. And yeah, I love that you and other musicians who do house concerts. The one that I think of a lot is S.J. Tucker.
yeah.
Because there's this one video of
her
on
YouTube.
We got
that video for doing some kid's birthday party.
Yeah, of the birthday party. And I that's like my favorite song that she's singing at this house concert. I'm like, oh man, I'm so jealous. I am so having her come to my birthday one year. what was I going to... There was something else. I'm sorry, I get very distracted.
Oh, it's understandable. I love Suge with all my heart and soul. We have some history together that goes back. I have helped her record. I have worked on probably 6 of her albums, including the Tricky Pixie release. I mixed that one.
Oh, wow. That's
and
really cool.
We were in a trio. I was in a trio with her and Becca Kelso called The Traveling Faith. And we did lots of house concerts together. It was fabulous. I'm a huge, huge fan, and we are dear, dear friends, and I love her very much.
Well, and this is the perfect time to mention that S.J. Tucker has a new album out and available now called Wonders.
Yep.
Yes. It's an awesome, awesome, awesome album. She sent me some of the mixes to listen to before it was released, and I was just floored, as always.
Does it have
I highly recommend it.
Go Away God Boy?
No, it does not have Go Away God Boy, unfortunately.
I know, but I said, if anything, to compare something, an anthem along those lines.
I don't know about an anthem, but there's this one song, I can hear it in my head, but I cannot, for the life of me, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Ah, I can't remember. What is that? I will go on her website and see what that song is.
I remember it's the first song on the new album.
I think it's called Ask Me Anything.
Yes,
it is.
That's
and
right.
I can tell you that that album is inspired by the work of the author Kat Valentine.
Oh, okay. My goodness,
and
you are just our encyclopedia, Tim. What would we do without you?
I don't know much about the work of Kat Valentine, but she writes fantasy novels that I guess it's the equivalent of The Wizard of Oz on steroids, except the heroine is not a pushover like Dorothy.
Ah, well, that's good. Strong heroines are always my favorite. Let me see, what else did I want to... There was something else that I wanted to touch on. Oh, my goodness. I guess this says something for outlines.
Production notes, taped up by the monitor.
Oh, yes, I'm sure that you always have your production notes up there, Tim. Or not Tim, Brendan, I'm sorry. Oh, let me see.
Well, while you're working on that, I'll touch briefly upon what we were talking about on the house concert.
And, go for it.
You know, as an artist, Ginger, why don't you, you know, how important to you specifically, but in general, are the house concerts on the survival of the independent musician?
Critical. They're absolutely critical. I play probably... 80%, 70-80% house concerts.
Wow.
And yes, and it's because, not only because they're just, I mean, there's so many good, I can't say enough good things about them. I prefer them. I prefer them to any club, anywhere, anytime. And now that's, the rest is churches. UU and Unity churches, that is to say concerts and services in the morning time, when I can get up and get going in the morning.
Oh, Ginger,
and,
I love you. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And festivals, of course, all kinds of festivals and gatherings of otherwise important events. And I'm playing Pittsburgh Witches Ball coming up, and that's going to be amazing. I can't wait to do that. After which I'm doing house concerts on my way to Pittsburgh. I'll be doing house concerts on my way back from Pittsburgh, and I'm also doing Boobies Brewery. Here's an exceptional club, which is why it's the exception to my rule, and to also SJ's the same way. She does not play clubs. And that's because the music is too... I don't want to say special because I'm not trying to say that the bars don't have their place, which they do, and many bands do very well in that environment. But
they're worshiping Satan and not the goddess.
But in a way, it is really special because, you know, it's like you crave that connection with the people. And like you were describing before, it just really doesn't happen in your typical bar or club because most of the time people have no idea who you are.
Well, and or they just aren't listening. Like I played a show with Dream Tribe at a bar. We played a lot of bars because we were coming from the rock scene. So that's really all we need to do. And when you're playing in a big band, when you have six people on stage, it's very hard to play a house concert. So we were doing mostly bars, and house concerts weren't really a thing back in the early 2000s as much as they are now. And we would do songs like The Four Directions. And we would be singing, and people were joining, and we had plenty of our crowd there. They would join hands. They would be calling the quarters. They would do a spiral dance, and they'd be going around pool tables with people in pool cubes going, what the hell is going on? You know, just they were making the most of that environment at the time, and it was beautiful and awesome. But it's even better when you can do the same thing in a safe space where the energy is clear and you have like-minded people and you can do a spiral dance if there's room, or call the quarters. I just did a house concert in Fayetteville, Arkansas last weekend, and we were able to light torches at every window outside of where we were playing.
That is awesome.
Yes, and each of the windows aligned with each of the directions. So at every verse, somebody lit a torch outside of the corresponding window. It was so amazing.
How fortuitous.
Yes, and you can't, you know, you can't have anything like that at a bar, you know. I mean, you can, and we tried, but then you've got a lot of other energy there that's sort of, you know, mucking up the works.
Right.
Well, this is a great segue, because you will be playing the Unitarian Universalist Church the day after the Witches Ball in Pittsburgh, November 10th. Not only will you be doing the music service, but Yes is bringing you in for a benefit concert for the UU Church. And something I've been working on, and it's finally coming together, is it seems like the whole church is finally getting in on this. The kids are going to be listening to your music in the RE program. And they're going to create a little, like, banner or some sort of poster or something that we're going to put up behind you during the show. And we have the Welcoming Congregation Committee, which is the gay group, the activist group in the church.
My people.
They're in on it with us.
I said my people.
Yes.
They're my people.
They are in on selling tickets, and whatever they sell goes to that committee. And the rest, whatever isn't Marshall, except going to the general church funds, and they can deal with that. But a lot of stuff like that. Hopefully, go ahead, Ginger. Sorry.
No, I didn't. I actually didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. And hopefully, I'll leave a little incentive for everybody to come within about 5 hours of Youngstown, Ohio. Make sure you come, because if you don't go to the Witches Ball the night before, because that will be awesome. The Poe Folk Cabaret, hopefully them and the Belly Dancers get together with you during the show while you're performing. And you're headlining, aren't you, Ginger?
Yes.
Ball.
Yes. That'll be great.
Yay.
I'm
That's
really
be really
excited
awesome.
About it.
Actually,
yeah.
I will definitely have to see, because Pittsburgh is like 4 hours from me. I might be able to swing it. We'll have to see.
It's 30 hours from me.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true.
4 hours, that's nothing.
If you can make it,
then Booby's Brewery is a lot closer to you in the Harrisburg area, Mount Joy, PA.
Oh, okay. Well,
I can tell you.
You know Pennsylvania better than I do.
I just went there last year to see Kaliana and Wendy Rule, but I can tell you that whether Ginger, do you know whether you're going to be playing upstairs, the tavern, or in the cave?
I'm playing upstairs.
That'll be a really cool place for you to play. That's where Wendy Rule and Kaliana played.
Yes, it is actually. There's some people who prefer, because the catacombs, the cave, which I love. I would really love to play there at some point, but it's hard for some people to make those stairs. And so it's actually preferable, and that's why I'm playing up there. They were telling me that the people that come to the Booby shows prefer to come upstairs. So that'll be better than going down into the catacombs, which is awesome. I love it, but the stairs are a little treacherous.
My goodness,
yeah.
Catacombs. My interest is peaked, and I have to go. There's just no way
that
I can go.
You do. You absolutely do. It is the coolest place on the planet. I love Booby's Brewery. That's spelled B-U-B-E-S, and it's in Mount Joy, and you should definitely check it out online, and it's such a cool place. You're going to love it.
That's really awesome. Okay, so we did have a question from I can never pronounce his name. His name is, I'm going to say, Steve Green Man in the chat room. And he asks what your favorite Velvet Hammer memory is.
My favorite Velvet Hammer memory. Oh, wow. That's a tough one.
Well, while you think of it, I will mention that it's the top of the hour, and you are listening to the Pagan Snipe Variety Show. Bottom of the hour, sorry. The Pagan Snipe Variety Show on blogtalkradio.com. And if you like what we're doing, we got a tip jar, folks.
Yes. Support your community.
Yes, the tip jar is located at bit.ly/pt-tipjar. Put in a dollar or two. Show your appreciation. You know, don't go to Starbucks tomorrow morning. Feed us instead. We are hungry and, you know, for your monetary contribution, because that's what keeps this radio station, partly what keeps this radio station going. And also, okay, so I'm just going to get this out of the way. I have to play a commercial for the Common Book of Witchcraft. So I'm going to put everybody on mute. We'll be back within a minute or so. And I'm going to play this. Here we go.
The Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft is envisioned as a copyright-free collection of spells, chants, rituals, and commentary dealing with Wicca and witchcraft in general, which people can draw upon whenever they like without having to worry about copyright, attribution, and the politics that sometimes accompany these things in our community. I think it's a wonderful idea. I certainly plan to contribute to it, and I hope that you'll join me in supporting it. You can learn more about the Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft, as well as supporting the Indiegogo campaign for it, at the following address, witchlibrary.com. I hope you'll go and have a look at it, and I hope you'll join me in supporting it. And until next time, may you blessed be.
And that, of course, was the voice of Lord Don Lewis of the Karelian nativist tradition of Wicca. And so, yeah, that's going to be a really interesting project. That's something else that Ed is working on. And we are back with the Pagans Tonight, Pagan Variety Hour. I'm Liz, and we are here with Ginger Doss. Say hello, Ginger.
Hello, everybody.
Yay! Say hi, Tim.
Yes, Ginger Doss has been installed in the show.
Yes, yes. We have now upgraded our operating systems to Ginger Doss.
Yes. Ginger Doss 1.1.
1.1, yes. And
now that the stainless commerce is out of the way, Ginger can answer the question.
Yes. Well, you know, it's really hard to say. I have to think back quite a bit. probably I have to say a couple of different things. One was opening for Kansas, which we did, and that was amazing, and it was a big, big show. We also opened for, who did we open for? I was going to say Robin Trower, but there was another person that we opened for that was an amazing, amazing event. But also when we played Mardi Gras in Galveston, and we were part of this parade that went down the seawall. And it was, not only was it a parade of bands on floats, and we were one of the bands that was playing on the floats that was going down the seawall, but it was also a contest. And the big stage at the end of the parade was where the final three bands were going to play.
Wow.
And they were judged as they went down the seawall. So we actually we placed in the top three, so we got to go down to the big, huge stage, and it was so exciting. And we went in and got in front of the big, huge, multiple thousand people crowd, and it was a big deal for us. And so that was another big moment for me.
That sounds really fantastic. My goodness.
It was.
I think that I would get stage fright if I were to do something like that. I used to sing in a choir with about 20 or 30 other girls when I was very, very young. And that's got to be nothing like, you know, going up in front of a couple hundred or a couple thousand people. Because, you know, we never did huge stuff. And it was, there was a bunch of us there. And most of it was like family or something. I can't really remember. It's a little fuzzy. But I think I would get stage fright if it were just me and about four or five other people.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I've played, you know, for two people and I've played for thousands of people. And sometimes it's the two people that I'm more nervous in front of, you know, because it's a much more intimate situation.
Right.
So, and that show, we didn't have time to be nervous because when we got to the end of the parade, we were descended upon by tons of road crew people, stage crew people that systematically took all our gear and moved it from the float to the stage in probably 5 minutes. It was the most amazing feat I have ever seen. And we were playing. It was like, okay, and you're on in 5, 4, 3, go. And it was like,
roadie magic.
It was insane. It was amazing. And it was so much fun.
That is really awesome. My goodness. Let me see. Do either of you guys have anything else to ask?
Yes, I do.
Go for it, Tim.
Of course, we're going to have you talk all about your latest album, From Love to Love. But it was your 2008 release, this Cocoon, that really captured my imagination. And being bringing you in for that concert on November 10th, to sort of help with my stress level, I getting all these moving parts in place, I've been trying to mellow out listening to your music, which I just got my master teacher Reiki attunement. I literally just pulled into my the home. I was talking on the road during the interview and all that, and only somewhat successful, but I've been listening to a lot of your music and getting into stuff that I didn't even know you did, and I'd really love for you to touch on your first solo album, because it's probably my favorite.
Wow. You know, I'm really glad you said something about that, because it's also one of my favorites, because it's very personal for me, and it's not so much of the spiritual side of me, but the personal side of me. And there was so much about that record that was so, it was a way of making my way for the very first time by myself, and that was really scary. You were talking about being scared, and this was very scary for me. After being in such great bands, I had no idea how I would go over, you know, and I have always been a songwriter, and songwriting is very important and a very important part of my self-expression, because I grew up in a household where I was told, you know, I was basically not allowed to express myself very often. I was shut down a lot. And so the music really helped me, and it helps me still. And that record was about expressing some of the very deepest parts of me.
That's wonderful.
It almost feels like that album has the most of your soul, if you want to put it that way, out of everything I've heard of you.
Well, it's really interesting that you've I think it's a part of my soul that doesn't come out very often. The other albums have a lot of soul in there too, and it's more coming from the place of my spiritual seeker. And the first record is much more about, I was going through some pretty heavy duty relationship stuff at the time, and it really focused on a lot of what I was going through then. And it was my first full-length studio record that I self-produced and arranged and recorded and mixed. And I worked really, really hard on it. And that in itself was a process, a catharsis. And I still go back from time to time to listen to that record, and the first thing that happens to me is that I'm propelled back to that time. It was a really, really intense time for me. And I can look back now on it, and it never stops teaching me.
That's wonderful when you can keep learning from something over and over again.
Yeah, it's true.
I was gonna ask.
I think that's my key to wrap that up, but I've got to ask about one song I want the details on. Mask. Sorry, Liz.
Mask. Yeah, that song came from basically I was starting to work on it, and it's very, very rare that I have a title for a song before I have the song completed. I let the song come up with the title. And in this case, I knew that I wanted to write this song, and I knew I wanted to call it Mask, because basically I was starting to write a song about my own struggle as a gay person and my own struggle with my identity and my role in my family and their acceptance of me and how I felt growing up and how hard that was for me. And I was starting to work on that guitar riff. And, you know, like I do, while I'm working on a song, if I get to a point where I'm not going forward anymore, I'll distract myself. And a lot of times that helps me to get back in touch with the channel that's coming through at the time. And I went online and I was just, whoa, you guys getting hit by a train?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We have like a nightly or bi-nightly train that goes through. It comes through just about this time, like every single time. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I love the sound of trains, and I have a song about it, but we can talk about that later.
Oh, wow.
I'm surprised it didn't happen right at the time when I was talking about it. But anyway, so I was online, and I was... And it just so happened, while I was working on that song and I was online kind of with the guitar absently in my lap, and I was going through, you know, just browsing online, and somebody sent me a link to a video that Ellen DeGeneres had posted about a kid, a young boy, and I forget his exact age, but it was young, it was like 13, who had gotten a Valentine from another young boy at his school. He gave a Valentine to another boy in school. And as a result, long story short, he was shot and killed. And it was so moving what Ellen said about that incident, that she was crying in the video, and it made me cry, and it broke my heart. And as a result of that, I went to a hate crimes website that had a lot of different stories like that, and that basically finished the song. I was able to take some of the stories that I saw online, one story in particular about a man named Michael who basically was looking for love, and he was online, and he was in a chat room, and somebody posing as another gay man invited him to meet, but it wasn't really a gay man. It was somebody who wanted to commit violence against a gay person, and lured him out there, and he went out to meet him, and it was a group of men, not just one, and they beat him to death, basically. And so I write about that in the song as well. So it was a very empowering song for me, and heartbreaking at the same time. But the chorus kind of brought it all together, where I'm trying to tell people that all life is sacred, and to listen to their hearts and not the hate, and that's where that came from.
Wow. That blows me away. Because, you know, as a bisexual person, I get it kind of from both ends. You know, I've heard gay people tell me that, oh, there's no such thing as bi, it's just a phase, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, I hear straight people tell me sometimes that, you know, I just can't make up my mind. And I'm like, you don't, it's just silly.
It is
know, people's intolerance is just silly. In this day and age, in 2013, We're still going on about this, please.
We still have a long way to go, and it basically is just a matter of education.
It totally is.
There's a group that I met in Florida called the Yes Institute. And I highly recommend that gay people, and especially young gay people who are struggling with their families and with their friends, and they're afraid to come out, the Yes Institute actually acts as a liaison between gay families, their churches, and their other family members who may have shut them out, or they may be in conflict that cannot be resolved, and they have brought these families together, and it is amazing. So the Yes Institute, look that up. Basically people who are afraid and who are shutting out gay people or judging them or deciding that they're wrong, these are people that just simply need to be educated. They just need a little bit more understanding, and so much can be done when you start to educate people.
YesInstitute.org. And wow, that looks really interesting. I'm going to go there after this.
Awesome.
Wow, this has been really amazing, and I can't believe we only have like 10 minutes left. Where else besides Boobie's Brewery and the Pittsburgh Pagan Pride are you going to be playing? So people.
Well, this particular tour starts out in Oklahoma City on October 31st on Halloween or All Hallows Eve or Samhain or whatever you'd like to call that day. It's going to be a very, very special day. That's Oklahoma City. And then we're going through to Indianapolis. We're doing another house concert there at a place I've done many house concerts. Fabulous group of people. Then from there, we're going up to, and I'm blanking out on my schedule. Then I think it's the Witch's Ball, but then I'm still working on booking the rest of that tour. I have everything up to the Witch's Ball and Boobie's Brewery, which happens the week after the Witch's Ball, up in Pennsylvania in the Northeast. I think I'm going to try to get something possibly in the Maryland area, and then we'll be coming back down through Tennessee and possibly, I'm still working on all that. So you can always go to gingerdoss.com/shows, and my full tour schedule is always there and updated. Also on my Facebook music page, I have my fall events list there with all the Facebook events and their links. You can go there to see my show schedule anytime.
Awesome. Do you have a Twitter? Go ahead.
Sorry?
Tim?
Well,
Tim?
If I may add, there's also something you don't necessarily need to bring Ginger Dawson for a concert. If she happens to be along your route, you also have a workshop in your hip pocket, Ginger. Why don't you tell the people about it?
Well, my workshop basically is something that has been instrumental in my own process, which is chakra toning. Basically, I like to get people together and join voices and tone the chakras, and that's a very simple way of putting it. But it is incredibly powerful, and I've done it at many festivals. And I don't usually do the workshop unless I'm at a big festival where I'm going to be for a while, because, of course, my music is the main focus. But if I have the chance and I have willing participants, then I love to get people together, because we use our voices and we go up the C major scale, and each of the 7 notes of the major scale corresponds to each of the 7 major chakra centers. And I talk a little bit about the history of each of the chakras, what they actually mean, why it's important to open them. And it's been a very, very powerful experience.
That's really awesome. That reminds me, like the chakra toning, we do a lot of that in the second and third degree of my religious tradition, Karelianism. And so, yeah, that's really awesome. And it can send tingles up and down your spine and make you all happy and awesome. And it's just really, really amazing to do. It just brings back really good memories learning how to do that. Oh my gosh, Ginger, I want to thank you so much. We have like 5 minutes left. So I just want to remind everybody that, you know, they can go, I think you have a Ginger, at Ginger Doss on Twitter, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
I just tweeted a second ago to tell everybody I was on.
That is really awesome. And, you know, they can always listen in the archives to this because it's out there forever. Once we hit end show, which won't be happening for another hour yet, until Ed and the Pagan Science Radio crew are done. It will be out there in the world forever, until we all crash and, you know,
fire the zombie apocalypse.
Run out of time.
Yes, zombie apocalypse. What now, Tim?
Before we run out of time,
yes.
I think the perfect way to end it is for Ginger to give a brief rundown on the latest album, From Love to Love. And particularly paying attention to a cover you did of MC Yogi.
Yes, MC Yogi rocks. Dinesh is fresh. Never thought I would have done a rap song just because, I just never thought about it, actually, until I heard that song. And, yes, Ganesh is Fresh is on my record. I perform it at just about every show because there's people whose song, they would be very angry with me if I didn't. And the version of it that is on my record is a live version that was recorded at CMA Beltane last year, so it's really fun.
That's really great. And, you know, we played that on here a month ago, I think, when it was in our playlist. And it's not here now, or else I would bring it up and play it. Darn it, I'll have to ask to bring that back in again. But we always have fresh music coming through our playlist, thanks to our producers, so... Anyway, Ginger, I want to thank you so, so very much. It's been awesome having you on. And if there are any parting words, now would be the time.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with all of you tonight. I really appreciate being on the show, and I wish you the best of luck in all your future endeavors. And if you would send me or email me, I will send you a free download of Ganesh is Fresh, because you need to have one for your show for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yes, I will definitely email you.
Getting stuff to play.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And I know we have that song. I know we have it because we played it once before. It's just a matter of me asking Tracy to put it back up on the switchboard again. But yes, I will definitely email you. And we can talk. I'll leave you in the queue. Don't hang up after I click this song to go out with. I'm going to go out with an S.J. Tucker song, actually. I'm going to go out with... Let's go out with Firebird's Child. That's, like, one of my favorites of hers. So,
yay.
Thank you, Tim, for hooking us up with Ginger. You're awesome.
Please don't
thank
do me that, because there's something else that's very important. You all can get your very own free Ginger Doss track. All you have to do is go to gingerdoss.com, sign up for the email list, and you get automatically sent a free track.
Awesome. Wow.
You need to be in charge of my marketing, Tim.
Yeah, he needs to be in charge of all of our marketing, man, because let me tell you, he can get so much done. Okay, so guys, this has been another wonderful episode of the Pagan Variety Show / Pagan Variety Hour. And I am Liz, and I am signing off with S.J. Tucker's Firebird Child. And we will talk to you all next Sunday. May you have a blessed week.
I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. I am the Firebird Child.
I am the Firebird Child.
I am the Firebird. I am his daughter. And like the flame, I am wild, 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 wild. I am the Firebird. I am. ever heard. Join in the dance and make it wild, wild, wild. Join in the dance and make it wild. To see a maiden dance around the fire is not so strange, but fire dances around the limbs of this uncommon maid. Be brave enough to burn and you'll be brave enough to fly. Join your sister Solace as she lights the morning sky. I am a firebird, I am his daughter. I am the firebird's child. I am the firebird, the boldest song you've ever heard. Join in the dance and make it wild, 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 wild. I am the firebird, I am his daughter. I am the firebird's child. I am the firebird, I am his daughter. And like the flame, I am wild, 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 wild. Wonders of the water, air, and earth are all the same. You'll never know wonder like the wonders of the flame. Freely fly as what you are and never walk in shame. You must not be a devil.
Copyright-free collection of spells, chants, rituals, and commentary dealing with Wicca and witchcraft in general, which people can draw upon whenever they like without having to worry about copyright, attribution, and the politics that sometimes accompany these things in our community. I think it's a wonderful idea. I certainly plan to contribute to it, and I hope that you'll join me in supporting it. You can learn more about the Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft, as well as supporting the Indiegogo campaign for it, at the following address, witchlibrary.com. I hope you'll go and have a look at it, and I hope you'll join me in supporting it. And until next time, may your blessed be.
And good evening, good afternoon, and good morning in 270 countries that we regularly visit. This is Pagan Science Radio. I'm your host, Ed Hubbard, along with my illustrious team, Alan and Brendan, which I'll be bringing on momentarily. I want to give you a quick update. I want you guys to be thinking about joining the Pagans Tonight crew and new shows. We're going to be looking for a new Sunday night show here soon, or a new crew. And so considering that, maybe we'll see what happens over time. Also, we're looking for a Monday night show. We're looking for all sorts of shows. This is a time of year we begin to stage up and change out. So if you have any great ideas, share it with us at pagantonight@gmail.com. Let me go ahead and say hi to the master of astrology and psychology. Good evening, Alan.
Well, maybe not a master, but at least a well-informed professional. We could say that. How are you doing this evening, Ed?
Well, obviously, I'm doing okay.
Right.
I'm here. I'm on the air. And I'm with you. So how could the world be wrong?
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Well, as they say, any day above ground is a positive one.
Okay. And of course, we'll bring in our favorite. I don't know. I don't. I want to say things, but we'll bring on Brendan and see how he's doing.
Howdy.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a rule tonight. No politics.
Uh-oh.
No snide comments about any of it, because I'm on the edge enough to go off on it. So, pox on all their houses.
I was going to suggest that if you wanted a new show, a pagan politics one would certainly be one with a lot of energy, but that's as far as I'll go with that.
Yeah, I think tonight is like a really sore spot with me, because I guess it has gotten to be a sore spot with me tonight. So, like I said,
mm-hmm.
pox in all their houses, and we're going to keep that away from here. And we're looking at possibility of a third hour on Sunday night, and, you know, cutting the Pagan Science Radio to its full hour, or maybe even and doing something else. We're not quite sure, but we're always open to ideas here on that. But I want to get started right away. We didn't have a real subject for it. Next week is the big Pagan Science Show. We're probably going to have at least Don Lewis and maybe some other people with us, and it's going to take some time. We're going to talk about Ouija boards, the science of Ouija boards. It's Halloween. I love Ouija boards. I think there's something, and I think it is the one area in our community that we absorb Christian thought like a madhouse. And
is that going to be sponsored by My Mystic Gems when their lovely line of miniature Ouija board
lovely.
Costume jewelry?
They do have lovely jewelry, and you can check it out, mymysticgems.com. They do. They have some lovely, lovely pieces, and they really have a really cool Ouija board. But next week we'll talk about Ouija boards in depth. And I think this cruise will be pretty interesting with Ouija boards, and I think Don might join us because he's kind of a Ouija board expert, and Ouija boards are always very popular and very frightening. And I think we absorb way too much Christian theology about Ouija boards in the pagan community about that. But that's not.
You have a point there. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but I think it's a good summary. You know, a lot of people get scared of them and everything, so it should be a good show.
But tonight I want to bring up a different idea, and there's been – okay, so folks, be a little bit aware. We didn't really plan out a show because the show that I had originally previously decided was at the Pagan Show to answer every question, I just didn't feel like it had the necessary legs to go forward. And so we went back to what we tried and true, where people were popular and people did enjoy. And I heard you guys were not immune to doing things. Oh, it's rare that I withdraw something after I start it, but this was one of those times I did. I heard what you guys had to say, and so Liz has kept her show and keep moving forward. But tonight we're going to talk about something I heard that I think that really kind of bothers me. And this is the idea of that paganism has science, that pagans who follow science don't believe in magic. More importantly, they're saying that, and it was a very particular argument that I was given, it says that paganism is based on the belief in magic, and therefore scientists are always trying to berate magic and trying to eliminate the specialness of it. And I go, well,
mm-hmm.
okay. And let me go ahead and add one thing. And they said, and I found out a few pagans agree, more pagans agree with it, that we have no right to be looking off the earth. That basically the idea of pagans in space, which is one of my big themes. And
pagans in space!
Right?
Yeah.
That, you know, carrying the seeds of space and Gaia, the argument was, if Mother Nature wanted us to do that, then she'd build us spaceships. And
well,
I thought that
you can flip that back into the logically quite consistent but slightly snarky argument that the only reason they're human beings on this planet is the planet couldn't figure out how to make plastics otherwise, and it really wanted plastics.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're just here to convert the oil into plastics. That's our function.
Mm-hmm.
And if we make spaceships on the other side of it, hey, bonus.
Bonus. Yeah. But in this argument, I felt that there was this whole idea of saying, no, we have to get back to a more – and their argument was is that we need to get back to a more natural lifestyle. We need fewer human beings on the planet. We need fewer people there. But we don't need to travel to the other planets. We can astral project ourselves to the planet. That if we practice our magic long enough, we won't need spaceships. When the time's right, we'll just teleport there. And that's why this whole universe
certainly
is not
gets around that whole gravity well problem.
Yeah, and that we don't need to ever leave the planet, and that and they went so far as to say that we could even possibly jump worlds and share bodies and all sorts of. They had this whole philosophy says if we didn't need science at all. And that Mother Nature would take care of us. And if we fell back into a more natural state, that would be good. I said, you know, that might cost billions of human beings' lives. It says, and they went, that was okay. That was all right with them. Because they feel that
well,
we were
possible.
Mm-hmm.
To make an omelet, you got to break a few
now,
eggs.
Ed, was this somebody in a blog or was this a personal conversation?
This is a personal conversation.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My first impulse with that is how well are they thinking out their theology?
I felt they really, in this case, I think they felt really thought out their theology. It was really dark.
Yeah.
It was really a dark theology. It is, I would call it almost apocalyptic. That we're killing the mother, we're destroying the flesh, we're doing all of this, and we need to back off. It's as strong as and the theology was as sound in its logic as any. It was basically a denial, but it denied that we had any right. The basic premise of it is, and this is where the science comes in, we, and this is the first time I've ran into it in paganism this hard, that we don't have a right to know everything, that our pursuit of knowledge is our sin, that nature would keep us in a much more natural state and take care of us if we were not so enveloped in the idea of pursuing knowledge.
Back to the garden.
Yeah, I mean, this is really, I think, if we look at historical paganism, I mean, the quest for knowledge and enlightenment was part of Plato, Socrates, Pythagoras, for God's sake. There's always been an intellectual trend in pagan thought. I mean, it was pagans that invented philosophy. The other thing is, this disparaging of intellect is exactly right, as Brendan is saying. This is the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil that they've absorbed some of Christian dualism in this, I think. This is either you're for me or against me, not all things are possible, which is, you know, that multiple viewpoint is not only a pagan, but it's also very magical. So I would question where they're getting their assumptions and their attitudes from. You know, which is why I said theologically shaky, you know.
And surprisingly, where they get their theology from is, again, same way that a lot of people do. They cherry pick between the leadership. And, I mean, they had an internal logic that made some sense. So I'm going to grant them that. They were not stupid about this. This was not a stupid conversation. They brought up the idea that in Judaism, you have the Talmud, you have the books that talk about it. One of the biggest questions that was brought up about the first Israeli scientists, astronauts, were Israelis allowed to leave the Earth?
Jews, yeah. Well, that's an interesting point. And as a matter of fact, I sat in on a fascinating panel once at a science fiction convention that was made up of Jews looking at those questions, which of the laws would be different on another planet, et cetera, et cetera. So there are Jews that are thinking of that. Some are more observant than others. Of course, it's only the Orthodox that follow all of the laws extremely strictly. But but yeah, there and you know, with each new technological change, they have had rabbis that have had to deal with it. You know, the reason why a Jew cannot, you know, on the Sabbath turn a light on is because it was deemed to be close enough to starting a fire, which is forbidden to do on a Sabbath. You can keep a fire going, but you can't start one. So there have been variations and people looking at the law on these kinds of things from that Jewish viewpoint for quite a period of time with every new technological advance.
Right. Well, the rabbis finally gave to the first Israeli astronaut, gave blessings to it. And their argument was on the law of return. Can they return back to us in their lifetime?
Mm-hmm.
If they can return, then space is no different than any other land. Can they return to Israel in their lifetime? So in their mind,
That's interesting. I never knew of that as an important point.
So that was the point that allowed an Israeli to go to the space lab, to the ISS.
Right.
That's why the astronaut really wanted the blessings, and they finally decided that there's nothing prohibiting it, at least at that time, as long as he could return. That no Jew is allowed to go so far as they cannot return.
So they can't sign up for those one-way Mars trips.
They could not sign up for a one-way Mars trip. Without, risking sense. So that made an argument for them. That made sense within their laws. And that was a very good law. I mean, that makes sense to me, you know, that if you can return in your life. If the Messiah came and they really got called back to Israel, could you return? And the argument is that even if it took you the whole of your life to return, which they say some of them do, that you can at least try to return. So technically no true Orthodox Jew could go on the Mars mission, and because we couldn't, knew that they could not. Yeah, they could because that's a no return policy. But let me take that the other way. But couldn't a pagan go on that mission with full open arms, with the idea of giving birth to a new terraforming project?
I don't see a problem with it because. To us, the earth is sacred, so is everything else, you know. One of my favorite lines is from a very classically known pagan song, which is the song Circles. The final verse says, "We who reach for the stars in the heavens, turning our eyes from the meadows and groves, still live in the light of the Lord and the Lady. The greater the circle, the more the love grows." And, the woman who put that to the music from the old folk song Windmills, she's a science fiction fan. And, you know, I'm happy that she stuck that one in there. You know, it shows those, the science-leaning pagans that there is a way that we can talk about this, you know. And, would we be able to work with Mars? Yes. And I hope that with our attitudes towards ecology and balance, we would probably do a better job of it than the Christians would, you know, instead of just exploit, you know.
Yep, and there it goes. In Mainstream Universe, David is mentioning, it says Mother Nature built us and we can build a spaceship. So that's fair enough.
Yep.
And so I've gotten into these kind of conversations. So let me take this and let me go ahead and get started with this. So let's talk a little bit about the fact. So science, okay. So we are getting to a point in our society where I believe I'm working on this Common Book of Wicca and Witchcraft project. Mm-hmm. In my particular piece that I'm writing, and I've actually begun writing it, I'm having issues writing, but as people know, I've been working on it. Wow, not cocaine. Okay. And one of the things that I'm writing is that all knowledge is worth knowing. I believe that as a witch, especially as a witch, that witches are dedicated to knowing the unknown. That literally, for me, the one of the philosophies that really attracted me to the idea of Wicca is that all knowledge is sacred.
Look at Bonowitz's laws of magic, the law of knowledge is one of them. The more knowledge you have over something, the better you can interact with it magically,
and
amongst other things.
And for me, there is no such thing as forbidden knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So what I get thrown in my face, and Brendan, do you know what I get thrown in my face? You probably know. If you think about it. What if I knew how to build a nuclear bomb? Should I have the right to learn how to build a nuclear bomb?
You said we weren't going to get into politics. This pulls up my whole libertarian file.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, fair enough. This is not that. We're not going to talk about today's current. Let me phrase that. We're not going to talk about the current government shutdown. Okay.
Right.
This is a shutdown free zone. Okay. But you can bring that out, Brendan. The libertarian. You can bring that out.
Well, you know, as long as you're not using it aggressively, you've got every right to. Matter of fact, I was actually thinking of something very similar to that today.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily of building a thermonuclear device in my living room, but I just started reading a book on thorium as a nuclear fuel. It's called Superfuel Thorium, the Green Energy Source for the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there wondering why in this book it's talking about development tracks that would be taking it to, like, you know, 2020, 2025, 2030. And I'm sitting there going, why?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if theoretically this is all good to go, why aren't there small operations making, because with the thorium reactors, you could have them be pretty much, well, like, be about the same size as a ton of worm manure, a cubic yard,
mm-hmm.
and be able to run, you know, whole small towns off of, you know, reactors that you fire up and then just let go. And,
right, right.
And they were talking about.
I remember mentioning. My friend, the nuclear physics professor, nuclear energy professor, had mentioned thorium. So I know from an expert that this is perfectly acceptable and workable.
Yeah, because it was one of the things that they started at that the research facility in Tennessee. I'm forgetting the name of it right now. That was part of the Manhattan Project, and then they kind of just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
They were really, it's the something, molten salt something form of using the reactor, and it's a lot more stable than using uranium, and
mm-hmm.
it doesn't produce a lot of waste, and it doesn't produce a lot of unused radiation, because it actually has a kind of a closed cycle of how the stuff breaks down and turns into fissionable material, and then that fissionable material turns back into thorium. But it was something that I was thinking. It's like, why aren't people doing these things in their garages? And so there must be significant parts of this which haven't quite been worked out. It was one of those fourth generation reactors that Diamandis was talking about in Abundance.
Mm-hmm.
It was
mm-hmm.
one of the paths he was talking about in there. But it did strike me. He was talking that there was a great deal of resistance in the nuclear industry. Because
mm-hmm.
it isn't, you know, he's had people being, the guy who's writing this thing is actually a magazine writer. So he's not somebody really inside, but he's been kind of covering this stuff for a while. And he's saying, well, you know, if it was a good answer, we would have done it a long time ago.
No,
and
that's,
it really
that's
isn't
no.
That, you know, it really isn't that way. It's like, no, you had the one thing that was working and it got the funding and this thing kind of got shoved to the side because it was going to be taking more development.
Well, the other thing is you can't make bombs out of thorium.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and they wanted to have their nuclear breeder reactors to make the bombs,
right.
Especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I think that people see. So we're constantly so the enemy of science seems to be fundamentalism at any level. And I'm not talking about religious fundamentalism, but the idea that this way is the right way and everything else is not.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as pagans, I think this is one of the things I think pagans are having the hardest time with. And I think that for me, it seems to me that paganism is starting. And I've been, seeing so many of these young people and people who've been raised away from Christian philosophy, who's been raised in a pagan philosophy. Brendan's children, my children, some of the children I've met along the way, Tracy's children, other children I meet. And they're so much stronger in believing their potentials.
Mm-hmm.
They're so much willing to believe so much wider than most children that I've met. And more so, nothing against us as parents, but our children are actually brighter than us and more willing to take on deeper thought.
Hey, they at least won't know what they want to do with their lives, and that's a big change.
Mm-hmm. And I think that... And so one of the things I think that is happening is this idea of knowledge is growing. You know, I mentioned to my daughter, not my daughter, my son, I apologize, about the idea of, hey, did you see this thing about diamonds? He goes, Dad, about diamonds, that there's a lot of diamonds out there in space. Whole seas, there's potentially whole seas of diamond in our solar system. Liquid diamond,
Yeah, I was reading that, and I'm sitting there going, I'm sitting there thinking, if it was gold, in terms of there'd be like a real good use for this thing, and electronics, blah 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 blah. But what use are liquid? Number one, how difficult would it be to obtain this liquid diamond stuff? Because for it to be liquid diamonds, it's got to be insanely hot.
Mm-hmm.
And under this, the only reason it exists in like possibly seas of liquid diamonds
under pressure
is because it's under insane pressure and it's insanely hot. And it's it doesn't, it's so far out of anything that we could practically interface with that it might as well not exist.
Well, my son pointed out to me, he says, oh, Dad, we already knew that. He says, that basically when they, in the 2001, when Lucifer was created, they ejected diamonds. And he says, of course he did. He said, in Ringworld, they already knew that that was happening. The puppeteers were making their spaceship hulls out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
from his point of view, not only did it already make sense, not only did he already seem to know that, he already had a usage for it.
As opposed to the mining asteroids where there are minerals on these asteroids that are an extremely limited limited supplies on Earth and are very useful in a lot of things, I'm sitting there going, how useful would this diamond stuff be? Aside from, the De Beers going out of business.
Right.
Well, there's probably, diamonds are the hardest material, so they've been used for drills and things like that. And, maybe there'd be more use for them. We'd find stuff to do if it would be easier to get.
Well, like make spaceship hulls.
Right.
Thin
layers, who knows what they can be for. But the idea that the younger generation is jumping into it, we're not surprised by that. They're not surprised. They're no longer surprised by the discoveries that we're making. They're now making.
Well, let me point out one extra thing here, though. He was not surprised because he was reading science fiction.
That's correct.
And there's always a curve. If I was looking at this thing, the Smithsonian did this piece, which is on YouTube, about Star Trek, and they made a point of showing how some of the they always had something that was at least possible in Star Trek as science, Even the transporter, you know, we have figured out how to transport a one atom at a time, you know. But the thing is, the people who read stuff like that, the writers are always looking at what's the edge of science, what's the next thing, how will this affect people, how will this affect society. And it's the science fiction fans that are more flexible in dealing with change, especially when it comes from technological sources, you know. So kudos to him for reading, you know, Ringworld, and you know, kudos to Larry Niven for keeping up with his science and the possibilities.
Yeah.
I just posted this morning a review of the book Fabricated, which is everything currently about 3D printing. And one of my complaints in there is that there is still very much a whole sci-fi thing on this. And reality is that you can 3D print a cookie. And if you really work on it, you can 3D print a cookie onto a surface that will bake that cookie. But it's a hell of a long way to go to walk up a replicator and say, Earl Grey hot.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, we're still got a long way to go for some of it. But some of it, yeah, I've seen the Star Trek. Marianne Kay posted on one of her pages about Star Trek, you know, still predicting the future. And just this week they had another one of these kind of discoveries, Star Trek discoveries, of how we, you know, how we do things. I mean, you saw in the pictures the slate, the cell phone. I mean, the one that always gets to everybody is the cell phone, the communicators, because our communicators end up looking our first cell phones look like communicators. There's no way around it. They just did. They used to flip open just like it, and the influence of it.
Our first cell phones looked like battlefield radio sets.
Well, that's true too. But I mean, once we got past that and started making the small handhelds, at one point they did look like it. They looked like it. I actually carried one of those Brooks with me. but now we see this sort of thing. So one of my questions is, and one thing I think of it is so if we were to teach pagan an education that was basically based in paganism, we would teach science, right? Or would the fundamentalists, or sort of the more environmentalists, say that there's things we shouldn't be teaching our kids? You know that we shouldn't be teaching that any knowledge, including, and here's the one that gets me about the environmentalist side of it: GMOs, genetically modified organisms. Should we abandon that because we don't like how they work? That they, you know, because Monsanto's gone batshit crazy of trying to, you know, to use this stuff. Some of it was very important to us.
Well, you know, the point I've made on that is that, you know, they may not like it, but the genie's out of that bottle. That horse is out of that barn, as I've pointed out to you. My elder daughter's done 3 years down at University of Illinois summer camp called GAMES, Girls Achieving in Math, Engineering, and Science. And her first year down there, it wasn't the group she was in. It was actually another group that was younger than her, did a whole genetic engineering thing where they were taking genes from a firefly and putting it into a man of war. We're talking about 10, 11, 12-year-old girls doing genetic engineering. And it's like, that horse is out of the barn if this is something you can get a bunch of tweens together and in a couple of weeks have a glow-in-the-dark man of war.
Right.
You know, you can have people saying, oh, this GMO stuff is horrible, we've got to go away from it. It's like, it's the genie's out of the bottle. I mean, anybody who's can pull together a basic lab equipment can make this happen to a certain extent.
Well,
and frankly, what's the difference between that and the selective breeding? I mean, look at the curve between teosinte and corn. This didn't happen because the goddess came through and said, let there be corn. This was, you know, 1,000 generations of Native Americans wanting to get the bigger the bigger grain.
Sure.
Go ahead, Alan.
Well, there's a couple of things about that. Number one, just because we can do something doesn't mean that we should. And secondly, yes, the genie's out of the bottle. But the other important thing is, just like any other action or behavior – there are things that are socially sanctioned versus not, and that can slow things down or lead to closer scrutiny with something. Do I think we need to do that with GMOs? Yes, I think the multinationals are being reckless, and I think that we need to look at what those possible side effects are. And unfortunately, they've also won certain court cases, which allow them to do some things with impunity, which I don't think they should be. But yeah, I mean, there's social sanction and social opinion. And there's the marketplace, which, you know from your libertarian, if nobody's buying the stuff, they ain't going to make it.
Yep.
You know, and certain countries have totally banned GMO products, too. So, you know, we're still sorting out a lot of this, and we'll have to see what happens. What's been really curious is when people first started talking, at least with me in the science fiction community, when we were talking about genetic modifications, one of the things that they had talked about was getting these plants to fix their own nitrogen from the air. And I don't think anybody's managed that yet. So if we could get plants that could do that, then we would have plants that could literally fertilize themselves from the air, which would mean incredibly abundant crops and things. And I don't know of too many people that would argue too much about that, but I haven't seen them doing it yet.
No.
Maybe somebody's working on it, but that would be a really good GMO project to do.
And then you'd get whole video channels of the plants fertilizing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So let me go ahead and take this thing. So, Brendan, you did not shield your kids from any knowledge.
No.
If they wanted to learn something, you let them learn.
A little bit, because there are certain things, again, talking about cultural and, mm-hmm. Societal stuff, there are certain things that, it's not okay to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's just stuff that's not okay to talk about.
Like what?
That they have to learn that stuff on the playground just like everybody else did.
No, not my kid. Mm-hmm. Not my kids. They were able to ask me anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got their sexual education, some of it from me and my ex, their mother.
Mm-hmm.
Sexuality we didn't oppress. So there's a lot of things they didn't get, that sort of thing. I've been accused of being way too liberal with my kids because I never hit them. I didn't, let them do some things. My son runs his own businesses now. He's been doing things. My daughter has her master's degree. So I think I've done pretty well with them. And neither one mm-hmm. of them is a psychopathic killer or anything like that I know of.
Well, that's what I'm mm-hmm. aspiring to with my girls.
See?
For them to be psychopathic killers?
Yes.
But they're going to be the best psychopathic killers out there.
Yeah, they're going to be veritable Dexters in this world.
Don't even start there. There is now Dexter clubs out there. The FBI has been warning there are Dexter clubs out forming. So that kind of like blew me away.
I hadn't heard of that one, but it doesn't surprise me.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I know an FBI agent. I'll check that rumor.
Yeah.
Mhm.
Yeah. Please do. I mean, I'd like to know more about it. I've heard of it on the edges. Mm-hmm. But getting back onto it, so when we talk about it, so one of the biggest things we're facing now,
mm-hmm.
Is that basically one of the things we're dealing with is that paganism is about to get into a position where we are going to start teaching our kids ourselves. We're already in the mm-hmm. beginning phases of that. We're already beginning with a lot of homeschoolers.
Mm-hmm.
I swear, there's homeschooling is spreading through paganism. I'm not a big fan mm-hmm. of homeschooling. If you're not a teacher, if you don't have a degree in teaching, maybe I'm a little fundamentalist, and I'm always skeptical of parents handling the entire educational system of themselves because I think
mm-hmm.
that no parent is intelligent enough or capable, except in very rare circumstances, of teaching their kid everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I know somebody who did. I know somebody who taught their grade schoolers all the way through their kids all the way through grade school, but then they went to high school on their own, and
so I can see
they
that.
Were pretty comprehensive. But they had degrees, you know. Especially the mother had nursing degrees, so she knew sciences, and you know, and she looked around. My niece is homeschooling her kids. But
mm-hmm.
she's like putting a tremendous amount of time into it and looking at curricula and researching on the net and whatnot. I think it can be done, and sometimes you can hire tutors for those areas that you don't have, but that's an additional expense too. But it is a harder way to go. Yeah.
And now with charter schools starting to come up onto the horizon. So let me offer this. Charter schools are starting to come on the horizon. Actually, New Orleans has actually become an amazing city for education. After Hurricane Katrina came through and ripped it apart and the public education system failed, they basically lowered the credentials on charter schools. I don't know if anyone's heard of this. I'm finding out. And that charter schools have come to dominate New Orleans, the city.
Hmm.
And scores are going up like mad. Hmm?
Interesting.
And a lot of minority students were
getting... In Chicago, I had heard that it didn't really help people's scores. It mostly busted the unions because the charter schools were non-union.
And I've heard that, too. Ramen.
Yeah.
But in New Orleans, it's really made a huge difference. And in some places, it makes a huge difference. I think in big cities, it doesn't make as big a difference because they end up putting so many resistances to the charter school. But having said that, I don't think it's a matter of time before we start seeing somebody who is, you know, pagan charter school forming, or a chartered or an online school, you know, an online school for pagans. And in that moment, what should we then say that we should be teaching them? I have no problem teaching a religion, just like a Catholic school, but should we then start seeing? Will we start seeing this fundamentalism that splits our community? You know, the environmentalists, that we need to be careful of what we teach our children. We want to teach them in a certain way. We don't want them – we want them loving nature. They want to do this. And that science might get the short shrift of that, that science might not be as heavily taught to them, even though, as you point out correctly, Alan, science is a pagan – almost, you know, almost comes out entirely from pagan sources originally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Science was a form of worship. Hmm?
Well, if you look at those wonderful bastions of science now, museums, you know, Museum of Science and Industry, you know, the Field Museum here in Chicago. A museum is a place of the muses. That's where the name comes from. They were temples to the muses. You know, I mean, you can't get much more pagan than that. I think every pagan who goes to a museum should probably do a short ritual before they walk in. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's something we could put in the Common Book of Wicca.
That's it. There we go. That's absolutely. Boy, I've gotten such hell over that, and I've gotten such praise over that whole idea. I will tell you, but...
Well, I remember seeing another thing just recently on Facebook, and I forget who it was. They said, if you don't do anything, you don't make any enemies. So,
Winston Churchill was the one who said that.
Was that Churchill? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I could see it being controversial, and you've got a lot of people backing you on it.
Yeah.
You know?
So, but the idea of it, okay, and so this all fits into me, is I believe that people should have an education. I am a big believer. So, Malala, a young woman out of Pakistan, amazing woman, bravest girl in the world, they call her, did not win the Peace Prize, didn't deserve the Peace Prize, but she deserves a lot of praise. And she, her argument is if we start educating people, especially girls, that we'd have a better, that there's, that improves the society. Everywhere we've educated women, we've improved society.
Sure.
And
I think that's the case. I mean, you know, they have a better chance of breaking out of traditional roles, of getting better incomes, taking care of their families, being less dependent on the males, and that challenges a lot of traditionalist viewpoints, which is why she was so marked by the Taliban. You know, She did win a European prize, though, the day before. So she has been honored by, I think it was some various others. And they said that depending on what happens, she may be reconsidered, too. You know, she's obviously very brave with an important message. And I think it's one that I think that, that pagans would do well to embrace also.
And so I think that's kind of where it is. So education to me is really vitally important, I think more so than anything else. And I think that's why we started the show, is the idea of being kind of teaching a little bit about the idea of science. And so when we get into it, so this is going to become a bigger debate in our community, I think, as a whole, not just about science, but what we teach. And if you ever want to know, I think, where we all come from, I think all knowledge is worth knowing. Mm-hmm. And I know Brendan believes in education for his daughters because he wants them to be able to stand on their own 2 feet, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he has brilliant children. So,
matter of fact, I was just working up a resume for the younger one today. She's done 4 years worth of performing arts stuff and is applying to a school that has a specific performing arts. She wants to go to a performing arts high school here. And mm-hmm. so we're putting together a resume for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got the big one wants to become an engineer and the mother of Skynet. And the other one wants to be an actress.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. That's good. And, you know, one of the things that, and this reminds me of something which I wanted to bring up, which maybe some of our listeners can consider too, is in the matter of education, there are these unspoken rules or beliefs that happen in families. And mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of what happened in mine. My niece's friend, where she graduated from a very well-endowed high school in Door County, where they have very low property taxes but very high property values. So they have enough money for the schools. And one of her students that she graduated with went off to go to an art school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that would have been considered absurd in my family because the general idea in the Salmi family is art is something that you do in your spare time as it's fun, but it, quote, won't put bread on the table. And I remember thinking that, especially when I visited my uncle and he pointed out a drawing that was done by my nephew and or by my cousin rather, and he said, "What do you think of that?" And one of the other rules is you never give direct praise to kids, which is kind of stupid, but it was obvious he was proud of his artistic abilities. I said, "Oh, are you thinking of going to art school or something?" "Oh, that doesn't put bread on the table." At which point I told him, "Look, somebody has to make art and somebody pays for it. So if you think you have talent, it's worth going for." And so one of the things that our listeners can do is think, well, what were some of the subtle messages of things that you weren't supposed to make a living doing or that weren't open to you that were just assumptions in the family and that certainly can be challenged. And in that way, we oftentimes challenge and channel our kids into areas that maybe aren't the best suited for them, you know? Or sometimes we unconsciously have assumptions that keep our kids, like especially girls, from math. Or, you know, you may get someone like, a friend of mine I graduated with who's excellent at working with his hands and actually got sent overseas to do woodwork on American embassies, you know, in their construction. He can do anything with a piece of wood and make it look gorgeous. But, you know, people are being shunted into things like computer stuff, and maybe the kids aren't into it, but they can be masterful artists or craftsmen. And so it's all my campaign of saying, what is your authentic self and how can you do more of it? And a good part of that is how can you educate yourself to do what you really want also?
Actually, that happened to me. That happened to me in my life. When I was about 14 years old. I was really bored in high school. I wasn't going to get, you know, there's no way I was going to finish high school. Nobody knew it at the time, but there was just no way I was finishing high school. Just not going to happen. And I wanted to jump into computers with my uncle. My uncle's all for it. He, because at the time, computer schools didn't require a high school diploma. You can just jump into a high school, you know. I would have been a little young in his mind, but I could have jumped into, at 16 years old, they would have accepted me into, at the time, DeVry, even IIT at the time. Because at the time, it wasn't quite that, they weren't the computer schools that they are today. And, oh, my family howled, you know, and they insulted my uncle in saying, you know, they were disappointed in my uncle. My grandfather worked so hard. He says, no, the real careers are doctors and lawyers. And, oh, this computer stuff, you know, why would you want to play with toys? And, and they literally
prevented it. They could really peer into the future, could they, huh?
You know, and otherwise, my grandfather was a great man. He was a very intelligent man. He was also very Masonic, and he had a whole belief that gave me some of my core of it. But they just saw that these computers were just something of that. And he says, and my grandfather quoted at the time, he says, IBM says that they at the time, and because my grandfather owned IBM stock, and they were being asked at the time, and this was 1980, about computers. And they said, and IBM said that, you know, registers and all that stuff, they were still in cash registers and there were other materials like that. And he said, and I said, well, computers. And he says, oh, they're not going to need as many programmers as you think. You know, your uncle probably will get work because he's a smart man and he's early and he's got work and he's going to start working for Visa, you know, credit cards. But how? And my grandfather said, well, I'm not sure how many people are going to want credit cards. But IBM just said that we're looking to sell 600 computers, and they said they don't think there's a need for much more than 6,000 to 8,000 computers throughout the entire United States.
That was a very, very famous quote, yes, of one of the worst predictions that had ever been made.
And my grandfather threw that at me.
And you know, and this is what made Bill Gates all of his money, because IBM could have filed a one-page thing to claim that as work for hire. And own DOS, and Gates would have been just a programmer there.
Yeah.
And
he may eventually, and in the alternate universe, Bill Gates became the eventually became the president of IBM.
In an alternate universe.
Yeah, you know, where the IBM absorbed it, and eventually Bill Gates would have eventually been the president of it, or you know, CEO of IBM. Harry Turtledove book, watch. If he's listening, he's probably going to grab that and go, yeah, you're right. So let me offer one last thing. So ultimately, the one part of pagan science I think is really important that is not being given, and I think that we do it all the time. I think there's a science in paganism that does that gets a really hard rift, a really hard rift. And that is, imagination is real. That we have this incredible ability to imagine. It's built into our rituals. It's built into our visualizations. It's built into how we speak to the gods. We constantly talk about how we utilize our creative visual experiences, our creative mental experiences to worship, to do these amazing sort of ideologies. But yet when it comes to saying we should be applying that reality, that those wonderful skills to mainstream society, to the world, they then, for me, I think this is where we get short shrift, because then they say, well, no, the world's the world. You know, these things are ours. They belong to us, that they are our rituals and they're our ideas. You know, the idea of creating a ball of energy between your two hands. Right? And I go, well, why can't we imagine that ball of energy is a ball of electricity? And how do we generate that ball of electricity so we can throw a real ball of electricity? Well, if you imagine hard enough, it'll eventually become real. It's real in your mind. And that idea that what we have is this wonderful hidden objective skill in our minds that we train everybody to, but then it says apply it to reality. It goes, oh, no, we can't do that. Too many people are doing that. And I really think that's the one thing that I think that if we do get into sort of teaching,
mm-hmm.
Then, you know, that would be where I think pagan science, really the strength of pagan science lies, because that's how we got to philosophy. That's how Pythagoras began to think. He began to wonder, imagine, oh, what's causing that? Imagination, curiosity. And I feel so strongly that so many people are trying to end the curiosity in paganism. One of the biggest accusations I've got in the common book of Wicca and witchcraft is I'm trying to create a Bible. And I keep saying, and so I finally told somebody, I'm not really trying to create a Bible. I'm trying to create a baseline that allows people to begin using their imagination of what could be.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, what do you mean? It's going to be eclectic? And I go, absolutely it's going to be eclectic. How could it not be eclectic and be useful? And they went, oh, you're not going to teach traditions? I says, no, we're going to teach traditions, whatever tradition wants to come forward. Oh, you're just going to do some more of that sugar-coated, big bunny, fluffy rabbit, fluffy bunny stuff, right? I like looked at it and go, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. I just like smile and say, yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Right. If they think that, they don't really know you, Ed.
Well, they don't know you, and they don't know Brendan. They don't know the people I talk to.
Right, right.
But because I wasn't going to teach
I saw somebody criticize, well, we already have a Wicca 101 book and a whole bunch of others. And it's like, yeah, and they're all under copyright, and we don't know the status of using it. And, you know, I was in a restaurant tonight where the staff sang happy birthday to somebody. I went up to the manager. I said, you could get in trouble for this. You know, that's under copyright. You know, you're using it for commercial purposes. I said, you better look this up, you know.
Right.
So I've been much more aware of copyright and things like that from the things that you've been talking about. And it's an important point in our community. And having stuff that's open source, you know, that everybody can access, I think is going to be a good thing. So
And
it doesn't have
to. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, and no, it doesn't have to be all fluffy bunny. You know, it can. There's plenty of things that can be written about how the spiritual quest is a struggle, and how getting to know your shadow part is part of that. You know.
One last thought of it, and one person I've brought on just to show is Raven Digitalis has agreed to do a piece for me, and to be on how to work with shadow. So right there.
Mm-hmm.
Should be telling people what it is. We have Theogenesis is going in there, and I'm hoping. I've asked for people to do interfaith. I've asked people to do. I asked Phil Farber, though he hasn't got back to me, and I hope I'm not embarrassing him. I've asked him to explain the idea of a witch's voice, how it's really how to use neurolinguistic program to build your voice. So these are some of the great things that are going to go in there.
And I just sent a note over to Steve Savedow about some other traditional things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is magic? You know, what is it? So it's going to be a little bit more than that. But this is kind of where I think it is. So in conclusion, I think that one of the biggest dangers inside the pagan community and to the pagan science community, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the strange things is this idea of allowing any form of fundamentalism to come in and to say, this is the only way and this is our true way and we must not deviate. Because if we do, we will be punished for some reason. You know, and I think that's something else. There is no sin in paganism. There just isn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's consequences. Didn't say there wasn't things. There's accountability, but there's not sin.
Well, you know, let me add something to that that changes it a little bit. I think there is sin in paganism, but it's the original meaning of sin, which comes from the Greek word, which is an archery term, which means you missed the mark. So,
okay.
Yeah, we're all of us have missed the mark in some way, but we're continually trying to perfect ourselves. We're trying to evolve to make ourselves better. And, you know, so in a sense, yeah, we've all sinned and fallen short, if you look at it that way, which is one of the few ways I would agree with the Christians, if they would just take that interpretation.
Right.
But we all try things and fail, but we pick ourselves back up from it and say, oh, well, I just learned something from that, or that was feedback. It's not failure. You know, it's like, okay, I got this close to the target this time. Now I can correct and find the next thing for the target. So, yeah, we, you know, you keep going until you do hit the mark.
Right.
So I think that's an important point, too.
Okay, so next week we're going to, let me go ahead and jump in here. Next week we're going to talk about Ouija boards. So, Brendan, do you have any last thoughts on this whole subject?
There's no sin in paganism, and there's no crying in baseball.
Sure there is. Beat with a bat. No, I'm kidding. You really? I mean, you haven't heard of the Cubs? Don't the Cubs fans kind of cry all the time? Never mind. There you go.
I don't know. Maybe they've given up.
I think we've gotten beyond crying on the north side.
Yes, Brent, Don's putting Ouija board, psychic tool or gateway to hell. One of the most famous shows I've ever done. Absolutely.
Oh, really? You had a show by that name a while ago?
We did. Oh, when we used to do telepathic radio in Chicago, it was the one that got people, we got a lot of attention, a huge amount of attention. We had Don on one side, and we actually did an on-air Ouija board. Bad. We are never going to do that again because you can't see the board. It was hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's missing that visual element, yeah.
And I was trying to describe it. we had him and Howard Himes, and Howard Himes is a ghost hunter, and he talked about how he had all these experiences of the Ouija board and demons combined, and how he went into places where there was portals to hell. Absolutely. He just was convinced that it was a gateway to hell. And Don was like, it's a psychic tool. It's, you get what you put into it. So, but we're going to talk about more of that next week.
All right.
So any last thoughts here? Or do we have any, does anyone have any news that they want to share with us?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is, if you check the blogosphere, there's a big kerfluffle that's happening on Scientific American. There was apparently a woman biologist who's a blogger with Scientific American, and some guy from some biology blog wrote to her and said, oh, do you want to, you know, do some pieces for us? And she said, okay, yeah, how much will you pay me? And he wrote back and he said, well, you're either a urban scientist or an urban whore.
Ooh.
Yeah. Now, she did a screen capture of that and did a blog on Scientific American and talked about the place of women in science and how some people are against this. And I think she was also African American, which may have been another little twist to things. Scientific American took down her blog, didn't even tell her. And they do this tweet that says, it wasn't on the topic of science. Now, as part of everybody's training, when they go on Scientific American with their blogs, they're told, oh, just talk about whatever. And at the bottom of the blog is, this is the blog writer's opinion, not necessarily that of Scientific American. Now, after this hits the blogosphere, there's a special hashtag on Twitter. People have reproduced her blog in other places just so that you can read it. And various people are even blogging. One guy who's a big time, I guess he's a PR consultant. He wrote a thing to Scientific American. Here's some free advice. It would have cost you $1,000. But, you know, here's how you fix this. Scientific American came out with a statement that, oh, it was difficult with the holidays, with this Columbus Day holiday, to get a hold of people, and we couldn't get a hold of her. And besides, we were worried about being sued over this, and which was not what they said their tweet was about. So people are calling them out about this, and it's going to be very interesting. They're saying they're going to do a feature about women in science now with this writer as the major person. But it's like, oh, they really shot themselves in the foot. But it did bring up this whole thing that, you know, people are struggling. They are working hard to give women the idea that they can be in the sciences. And I love it, Brendan, that your girls are, you know, you're encouraging them to go into different things. And you've got the one who's done this project for many years. And that there are those special programs. So
if, yeah, they've got a really great women's engineering program down at University of Illinois down in Urbana. And that's currently her number one choice for going to school right now.
Well, Champaign-Urbana is the place that came up with the first web browser, for God's sakes, you know, Mosaic.
Uh-huh.
So their reputation is very, very good in a lot of different areas. So, you know, good on her and good on you for encouraging her that way, you know. But think of...
Because I want to be the grandfather of Skynet.
Right. But, you know, all of those listeners here who have girls, consider, you know, do you take them out to science fiction movies? Do you talk about how something is really cool that's new in technology? And do you ever mention to them that they, too, could be a Madame Curie or an engineer or a biologist or whatever, you know? So... this Scientific American kerfluffle at least is bringing that subject up some more, which I think is some good, you know, some silver lining to this cloud. But we'll see how Scientific American gets back some of its reputation, which it certainly is damaged from all of this. So that was one thing that's happened in the news this week.
And there were a couple of interesting things that went up on the site over Facebook/Pagan Science, a thing about that I just found of neurons firing backwards in sleep.
Yes.
Which is kind of interesting about how memories may be, you know, getting laid down. And then another thing about the quantum computing labs that Google has thrown a whole bunch of money at.
Does it look like they're going to get those on going, do you think?
You know, if all it needs is cash, they've got it.
True enough.
Mm-hmm.
But, and they have Kurzweil directing all of that, don't they?
I think so. It's, you know, it was interesting. Again, I'm only about 10% into this book on thorium. And the money that they have funding the research that this guy was talking about is, again, coming from Google.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they're spending money into a lot of real basic science.
Oh, the other big news, which came out just after our other show, I think I posted this later, was there's a fusion. They actually got a fusion reaction to put out more energy than they put in.
Huh.
And did I mention this last week or was this after? I'm not sure. But fusion energy is the other side of atomic energy. And if we get it going, this is no pollution. This is taking, you know, water and converting it into energy. And, you know, it'd be absolutely wonderful as a source for major power if we manage to get this working. But what's interesting is they're saying that they're hitting these atoms together, and they're using lasers to crunch them together so that you reach that fusion potential.
Oh.
And it's interesting because years and years ago, there was a group called KMS Fusion in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where I went to school. And they were working for a long time on that same idea, and this seems to be a development from that. So it's kind of interesting that that idea didn't die out and they were able to do something with this. I don't know how far we are from this, but maybe they'll start throwing some money at it. And if we can get fusion reactors going, then, well, heck, we'd even have really good ways of making spaceships move and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that's the other big, big news.
I so gotcha.
That's most of
Well, you're going to need to get into space, so That's something we're going to need. We need a lot of things, but we're going to get there or not. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll have to see.
We'll see. And it is a question because we're always, again, we're racing against the clock right now. It's how fast are we learning? And I do think that we are learning. So Brendan, did you have anything you want to share? You did a great piece on the plant this week.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I'd been bitching about that. I'd had been planning on doing that piece for a month, and just hadn't, because I had, as you can see, I had all sorts of links on that, and I was just kind of gearing up because pretty much what it was more a post on what an anaerobic digester is. And what it means in a system like that than just, oh, hey, look, the plant's getting its anaerobic digester. And so I had all of these tabs open and said, you know, oh, man, do I have time to write this thing or not? But, yeah, that's up at greentechchicago.info if you want to check it out. And it's got links to the rather fun Flickr page from the plant where it's got really awesome pictures of this huge metal cylinder that's currently sitting out back.
And that's good.
I think I may share this with my brother. My brother has a degree in wastewater engineering and all that, so he might be interested in seeing this.
Absolutely. Cool. And well, the plant just started a Kickstarter campaign today.
Yeah, I saw that.
They're trying to build a retail space, which I hope they do because that will save me a lot of grief to be able to put. Because people are always asking me for worms. To buy worms, I'm not at the plant all the time. It doesn't make sense for me to be at the plant if I'm waiting for people to buy worms. But a retail space would be great because then we could put in a little grocery. You know, we can put them in a nice kind of space. But they're trying to do living walls. They're trying to do a lot of things. It's like 60. They're trying to raise $61,000.
And a ramp. And an ADA compliant ramp.
That's their big thing. They're getting really hard.
We could have gotten the late Ron May there now. When they get that in.
Yeah, and that's a big thing, too. They're being hit pretty hard about the fact they don't have an ADA ramp. If they don't, again, not talking about government, if they don't soon, they may lose some fundings that they're trying to get. Because they're not fully accessible. But they're working on it, so check out that Kickstarter. But remember, if you really want to invest in an Indiegogo campaign, check out witchlibrary.com. Thank you very much. All right, gentlemen, I think we're going to wrap it up. So, Ellen, what do you want to share? We know everybody should know where to find you right now, ellensalmi.com, but why should they contact you this week?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, I'm moving into the area of really wanting to work with people and do some sessions over Skype. Part of the thing is I'm getting sensitive to the fact that unless you're in a major city, it's really hard to find counseling from somebody who understands paganism. You know, we do have a few pagan therapists here in Chicago, but that's pretty unusual. And, I want to be able, if people are interested, I will work on a sliding scale. We can set up a weekly time. But I'm starting to do more things that are more based on language patterns and things, whereas I still need to see somebody, I think, to really be able to do good counseling with them. There are some folks that do things just by the phone, but I would prefer Skype because if somebody has a particular look on their face when they say something, it's important information. But I want to let people know that that's one possibility. The other is I'm working on a project, which I'm just letting people know a little bit, that I'm trying to smooth out the bumps, and I may be doing a thing where if you want a monthly prediction from me based on your astrological chart as to what's going on for the coming month, you'll be able to subscribe to that. And Ed very kindly gave me his birth data, and I'm using that as my first template to see how long will it take me to do this and that and everything else. And Ed, I'll let you know about some of those results as things come along. But
that's
I'm
okay.
excited about that as a way to get my work out there. So that's something to look into.
I can't imagine that my chart's any different than anybody else's. So.
Oh, everybody's very unique, unless you were a twin born within about 4 minutes of each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, yeah.
Is it really that simple? Is it really that unique? So unless you're a twin born within 4 minutes of each other, or could you be two children born within 4 minutes of each other at the same hospital?
Yes, and there have been some interesting studies of people that are called astrological twins. And there have been some interesting things that happen. Sometimes what winds up happening is certain potentials in the chart that one kid will take some of those potentials and the other one will run with some of the other potentials. So there's been a few studies, but those are pretty hard to do, just finding people within those time spans and things like that. But yeah, it does have to be pretty exact. Mm-hmm.
I can see that. All right, Brendan, mm-hmm. We all know how to get a hold of you, but why should people try to get a hold of you this week?
Well, it struck me that if you get little rubber feet, it would help the scale stop sliding. If he was going to be doing all this stuff on a sliding scale, it doesn't sound like that's particularly convenient.
Yeah, there is that. Thank you.
I'm always liking to be useful and stuff.
Brendan, actually, about your presence on the net, I have a question for you.
Yes.
I did a Google search, and, you know, you said that you had done this book about fabrication. So I Googled Brendan Tripp fabrication.
Yeah.
And it seems that there's some company with your name that makes rubber stuff in Skokie.
How weird.
Yeah, take a look at it. It's your name. And it says there's a company in Skokie with Brendan Tripp. So apparently somebody has you making rubber duckies in Skokie, Illinois.
So there's another cheap imitation beach out there.
Apparently.
We had an exercise on Chicago Now on the Facebook group earlier this week, and Jimmy was wanting us all to Google our name just to see how far into our Google results our Chicago Now blog came. And, you know, Googling my name, did you Google Brendan Tripp or Google B Tripp?
I Googled Brendan Tripp fabrication because I wanted to see what your review of the book was.
Uh-huh.
But it led me to this other thing. So,
yep. Brendan Tripp is a U.S. company located at 832 Nile Center Road, Skokie, Illinois. Fabricated rubber products. How bizarre.
Yeah, it'd be interesting for you to show up there and ask for Brendan Tripp.
Yeah. Because I know there's a Brendan Tripp in New Zealand, and there's this one out east who is a black guy in his 20s, a former Air Force guy who's a rapper. I'm sure his friend. I can always tell when it's his friend signing up for one of my things. Mm-hmm. It's like you're going to be disappointed. But when I just Googled my name, that really is weird. It's a manufacturing, molding, fabricated rubber products business.
Huh. Yep. In any case,
how bizarre. That really is kind of bizarre. Anyway, it's the book's fabricated, and not fabrication. Mm-hmm. But you can. I've got btrip-books.livejournal.com is my book review blog.
Mm.
Eventually. So this is really weird because the. I wonder why they have my name showing up on that, because and there doesn't seem to be a Brendan Tripp involved anywhere else on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
How bizarre.
How it is bizarre. All righty, then. Mm-hmm. Well, folks, you can always check out me, naturelittlerecyclers.com, pagonics.com. Buy some worms, folks, if you want to find out anything about worms. Terrific. That's really what I do for a living now. Please help me out. I'm going to be at the plant all week. I guess on the 19th and 20th, we're going to have this whole great touring system because the plants become a member of the Chicago Architectural Foundation Tours. And we may have as many as 1,500 people going through the plant this weekend. So come on out.
Wow.
And yeah, and then I guess next week we'll talk about more of it. Me, I guess I'm being drafted into going to a solar energy convention or conference.
Yep, we just got our confirmations on those.
Yeah. So
where is that going to be?
Chicago.
Cormick Place. Huh?
We don't travel. We had a chance to go out of the city. We don't travel. We can't afford to travel. I just turned down, and I actually have stopped. I've actually stopped planning to do booths for a while. I mean, I think that. I was spending a lot of time and energy going to building booths and doing things of that nature, and I'm just really focusing on the business now because I do have a lot over there. Yeah, I'm not going to be doing a lot as many shows as I was because I don't, you know, they're expensive. Oh, they're really expensive.
Mm-hmm.
What else can I say about that? Well, folks. That's our show for the evening. We will be back next week with Pagan Science Radio. If you guys like Pagan Science Radio, if you like Pagan Science Radio, let us know that you like Pagan Science Radio. If you like the variety show, let us know you like the variety show. If there's any show that you like, let us know at pagantonight@gmail.com. And because if it goes off the air and you didn't say anything, you don't have a right to say anything because you helped make us the show. So if you want to hear it, somebody mentioned, Main Street Universe mentioned, I hope Alan Staley stays on your network. I hope you enjoy his commentary. I enjoy his commentary. So
yeah,
there you go.
That's very nice as a comment. Yeah, I appreciate that.
I think people do enjoy your point of view. So you check it out. If you have an idea for a show, we're always changing up our shows, as we know, because we're striving hard to get better and better shows all the time. And so with that, we will say goodnight. Say goodnight, gentlemen.
Goodnight,
gentlemen.
And here we go.
Thank you for joining us on WSI-sponsored Pagans Tonight Radio Network. You can hear us every night right here on Blog Talk Radio or download us later on iTunes. Please check our schedule for accurate show times. For all questions, comments, or show suggestions, you can email us at pagantonight@gmail.com and let us